Okay. In a recent study, it was shown that Americans lose objects and spend as much as 10 minutes a day looking for them. That's the average. So somebody's saying more than that. Well, remember, it's an average. So somebody might not lose anything, and somebody might spend, 100 minutes. It's an average. But just take a little survey. Now, this is like true confession. Honestly, we're all among friends here. How many of you spent any time this morning looking for a hidden or lost object? Hands up. Okay, there you go. I won't ask you how much time you spent, okay? I won't go there. How many of you have ever lost, however, a truly cherished object, something that just had deep meaning to you? Have you ever lost that? My goodness, look at the hands, okay? Well, I did too, and I will never forget it. A couple years ago, when I was taking care of my mother right before she made her transition, I lost my wedding rings. And I woke up that morning, and I had taken care of her all night. I was sure I put my wedding rings on the kitchen sink. I could have passed a lie detector test that I put them on the kitchen sink. However, later in the afternoon, when I reached for them, they were not there. At first, I was calm, but remember, I had very little sleep. So the panic set in, and I searched everywhere. I mean, I looked in every nook and cranny in the kitchen. I went out to the curb and looked through the trash that I had put out at the crack of dawn. Then I went into the living room. I overturned couch, cushions. I looked under rugs. I looked under furniture. I looked everywhere, and no rings. I tried so hard to remain calm and practice my principles. I kept saying, God knows, God shows. But you know what? God was not showing. And so, I got more and more nervous as the day went on. And finally, my sister-in-law arrived. It was her turn to take my spot as the caretaker. She arrived, and she added the St. Anthony's Prayer, which I had never heard of for lost objects. Some of you are shaking your head. So we're walking around searching and praying. And, this went on for like 3 hours. And the rings, we had looked everywhere. So finally, in total desperation, she said to me, let's go out and go through the trash one more time. I said, I already did it. She said, I just have a feeling. Let's go look. So it was a really hot day. We're down digging things out of the trash, throwing trash all over the driveway, and no rings. And then at the very end of that, she looked down and she said, there's a paper towel stuck to the bottom. She grabbed a stick and she started lodging it out. It flew out onto the driveway, and there, wrapped up in a little bitty package, almost like a birthday present, were my rings. And almost immediately, the trash truck came down the road. So it was such a close call. I just cannot imagine. I'll never forget it. I will never forget it. And so often, a lot of you raise your hands, and I'll bet often when we look for something, we look everywhere, don't we? We waste a lot of time and energy looking for places where the object is not, right? Because we don't know where it is. And I really think that some of us, maybe many of us, do the same thing when it comes to searching for spiritual truths. We look everywhere. We read book after book. I'm not naming anyone here, and I'm not even looking at anybody, but I'll just tell you that when we did the library project, some of us delayed the project because we kept finding books that we personally wanted to sit down and read, okay? You know who you are, I'm not saying. We take workshops, don't we? We go to classes. We look at Unity FM. We just do everything we can to find this blessed truth. As truth seekers, we also just, we just live in this expectation of looking for answers. And the truth is, the sad truth is, there are some, oh, come on now, you worked a minute ago. There are some questions that can't be answered by Google. That's very true. There are some. Actually, I Googled spiritual truth just for fun this week, and I found approximately 2,400,000 links. So there are a lot of people who think they know the truth and are willing to share it with us, but I don't know if I trust it all the time. So what do we really mean by this word truth? Charles Fillmore tells us that truth is the absolute, that which accords with God, divine principle, that which is, has been, and ever will be, that which eternally is. So that's a good measure for what is truth. So where do we start our search for this spiritual truth? Where do we look? Where do we look for that truth that can inform and transform our lives? Certainly, we can turn to the Bible, where we find countless stories of God speaking to human beings directly, imparting gems of truth, or giving guidelines for actions. We know all of these. God speaking to Adam and Eve in the garden, never mind they didn't listen. God singling out Noah and giving him detailed instructions about how to build the ark. Never mind that Noah had some questions. Wait a minute, which one is a cubit and which is a centimeter? And there was also that dramatic story of Moses, God appearing to Moses at the burning bush, issuing orders for leading his people out of Egypt. I can just hear God saying to Moses, Moses, do I have your attention now? Do I have your full attention now? And we have other biblical characters throughout the Bible who hear the voice of God. And sometimes divine truths are delivered by angels who act as messengers, or divine inspiration comes through a dream or a vision. In Job 33:14-18, we read, "For God does speak, now in one way, now in another. Though man may not perceive it, in a dream sometimes, in the vision of the night, when deep sleep falls on men, they slumber in their beds." And we're so used to these ancient stories about God speaking directly to characters in the Bible that they don't maybe seem improbable to us. Certainly, these accounts do exemplify the relationship of the ancients to their God. Many of them depicted God created in their image instead of the other way around. Metaphysically, the vivid Bible descriptions of characters hearing the voice of God represent intuition. I know you all thought that was just for women, but it's not. It's for men and women, intuition. And spiritually, it's defined as a natural knowing capacity, an inner knowledge, the immediate apprehension of spiritual truth. And Charles Fillmore says, through the power of intuition, man has direct access to all knowledge and all wisdom. Gandhi said, God speaks to us every day, but we don't know how to listen. And maybe this is because we try to listen through our intellect. Spiritual insights come not from our heads, and we're so used to living here, aren't we? Not from our heads, but from our hearts. The intellect, or head center, Charles Fillmore says, it's not wise. Wisdom is not its office. And by wisdom, he means spiritual intuition, spiritual understanding. He means by wisdom, the voice of God. So he's saying it doesn't come through our heads. We can't get it there. It's based on, through our heads, we look at literal knowledge and without any consideration of spirit. And Emily Cady always says it best. She says, intellect argues, it does not reveal the truth. Spiritual things must be discerned spiritually. So instead of coming through our heads, spiritual truths come when we become still and make that 18-inch journey from our heads to our hearts. Now, I know it looks like it up there, but I'm not talking about a Hallmark heart, okay? I'm talking about not emotion. We're talking about a spiritual center. And in our hearts, that's the center that we connect with God. That is the center where we actually have that conscious communion with divine energy, where we feel God's love and power. In the heart, we realize that we are one with the Most High, and in the heart, we know our oneness. Now, like that episode with my rings, sometimes, I think there's an old song that had this title too, sometimes we search in all the wrong places, don't we? For the spiritual truth, just like we search for physical things. We won't find spiritual truths in a Google search. We won't find them even in books or workshops. The truth is within. The voice of spirit speaks within, that powerful voice. Now, it's not always a physical voice. Sometimes it's an impression. Sometimes it's a feeling, a deep conviction, but it's more powerful than any verbal voice that you'll ever hear. And many of you I know this old Hindu legend. This is in the preface of Discover the Power Within by Eric Butterworth, as well as many other places on the internet. And the legend goes like this. Long ago, all men were created as gods, but they so abused their power that Brahma, the chief god, decided to take it away from them and hide it where they would never find it. So he called together his council of lesser gods, and they debated and studied, and finally they said, oh, we know, you can put it in the very depths of the ocean, and man will never find it there. And Brahma said, no. Man will learn to dig right down and find, or to dive right down and find it. So they went back to council and they said, okay, we'll just bury it deep in the earth and man will never find it there. Brahma said, no. They'll dig and dig and dig until they find it. That's not a good hiding place. And finally they said, we will put it on the highest mountain. And Brahma said, no. They're persistent. They'll just keep climbing until they find it. And so finally they gave up. They said, there's no place on earth where we can hide man's divinity, that he or she will not find it. And so Brahma thought, and this is why he was the chief god, he came up with the answer. He said, I know what we'll do. We will hide it deep within. Human beings will never look for it there. And that's kind of what happens, isn't it? It really is. Ever since then, the legend continues, humans have been going to and fro throughout the earth, climbing, digging, diving, exploring, searching for something that already exists within. And Eric Butterworth adds, 2,000 years ago, a man named Jesus found it and shared its secret. But in the movement that sprang up in his name, the divinity of man has been the best kept secret of the ages. There's a beautiful Bible story that a lot of you know about Jesus' reaction to a disciple who discovers the secret. It's in Matthew 16, 13 to 19, and this familiar episode takes place as Jesus and his closest disciples are taking a break in the city of Caesarea Philippi after the success of Jesus' early ministry. Now, this location is 25 miles north of the Sea of Galilee that we talked about a few weeks ago. It's at the base of Mount Hermon, and it's one of the largest springs feeding the Jordan River. It's called the Land of Waters. This is where our story takes place. And it begins. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do the people say that the Son of Man is? He's saying, what's the word on the street about me? What are people saying about me? And they said, some say you're John the Baptist, others say you're Elijah, and still others think you're Jeremiah or one of the early prophets. Now, always the master teacher, Jesus knows when to pose the deeper question. Then he says, but who do you say that I am? And Peter answers immediately, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answers, blessed are you, Simon, son of Judah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. So, Jesus' second question is actually and certainly the more compelling one, where he says, who do you say I am? And we get the impression that Peter's response is absolutely spontaneous. It just bubbles out of him. He opens his mouth and there it is. And he says, you are the Messiah. In Greek, that would be the appointed one, the Christ. Jesus then blesses Peter and changes his name to Simon, and we know in the Bible, name changes always signify higher consciousness. And he blesses him, and he says, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. Here he's affirming that input from the senses, from the intellect, could not have led Peter to that revelation. It had to be directly from God through his own indwelling Christ. Ed Townley, who's a wonderful Bible scholar, he has an online site called Interpret This, which is great. He says that metaphysically, I think what happened here is that Simon has a dramatic spiritual breakthrough and Jesus is deeply moved to witness it. Peter is suddenly realizing that he is with not just a gifted teacher, but the Christ, the Logos, the Word, the creative power of God in expression. And Jesus has been waiting a long time for his disciples to come to this realization. And of course, Jesus taught us again and again and again that that creative power of God, the Christ, is within all of us. Now, Unity teaches, as many of you know, that Peter represents faith. Not faith in appearances or outward opinions of others, but faith in our own intuitive knowing, faith in our intuition. And the garden, we sang that beautiful song a few minutes ago, the garden that where we walk and talk with God is an inner garden. It's the garden in our own souls. So our story continues in verse 18, concludes actually with verse 18. And I will tell you, Jesus is still talking to Peter, now Simon, sometimes he's now called Simon Peter. And I will tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I shall build my church, and the gates of death will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Translation's a little awkward, but that's what it is. Okay, so Peter, Petros in Greek, the word Peter means rock. So Jesus is having one of his funny little play on words here. We don't always get the humor of Jesus because of the translation issues, but he's kind of playing around with it a little bit there. And of course, many of you are former Catholics, I know, in this room, and our Catholic friends believe that this rock comment is to mean that Peter himself, the man Peter, was the rock, to be named the head of the church with a long succession of popes to follow, and that's one interpretation. However, historians are pretty clear that Jesus never contemplated formation of a new church separate from Judaism. He said, I don't come to abolish the law, I come to give you the spirit of the law. He was trying to work within the existing church or synagogue. He didn't organize a church on earth. He didn't authorize anyone else to do so. So the word in Greek translated as church means an assembly, an ecclesia, if you will. In other words, a gathering of people who are sharing an awakened spiritual consciousness. Based on the revelation of God, people come together to recognize and express their innate Christ energy. The rock, we believe, is not Peter, the man. The rock is that solid foundation, that stone that absolutely holds our ability to understand and embrace our own Christ nature, the truth of our being. And this understanding is what earns Peter the keys to the kingdom of heaven within. And Jesus promises that this realization will transform our lives and set us free. It will loose whatever needs to go, and it will bind whatever is good and true and beautiful with us. Now that sounds great, doesn't it? It sounds powerful, it sounds empowering, it sounds amazing, it is. But you know what? In our human skins, it's not always easy, is it? It's not always easy to reach that realization about who we really are. It's been said that in order to grasp the truth, we have to stop believing lies. And I think the problem is sometimes it's hard to discern the difference between the truth and something that is not true. In an article entitled, God, Is That You Calling? And you can find this on the internet. It's a great article. I'm just going to give you a few little points of it. But Ellen Davenport says, and this is so true, so many voices are vying for our attention. How do we know if it's the voice of God or if it's the voice of ego, fear, anger, or the lonely child? And sometimes the only option is to trust the voice, to follow the guidance and see where it takes us. Because if it's from God, it's going to take us to ever unfolding good. Davenport does, however, share her thoughts about a few ways that we can tell the difference. I'd like to share a couple of them with you. First of all, God never asks us to harm anyone. So much for the terrorists, right, who say they are listening to God and then engage in heinous acts. I came across a wonderful quote this week by Anne Lamott, one of my favorite authors. She wrote, "You can safely assume that you've created God in your own image when it turns out God hates all the same people you do." Isn't that a great quote? And it's so true. God doesn't hate anybody. God is love. And so, if you're dwelling in that land of hate and anger, you're not really aligned with God. And insights from God are always, always for everyone, not just my own, but everyone in the situation, for all unfolding good. Secondly, Davenport, we talked about this a little last week. She says that inspiration is when inspiration is truly divine, often every little detail will fall into place. And it just sort of comes up to support us. Now, she does caution that doesn't always happen, that sometimes the lantern of faith will shine just a few feet ahead of us, and we take those few steps, and then we can see a few more steps ahead, and a few more steps ahead. But with each trusting step, we do see a little farther, and it all evolves. And sometimes a divine truth or insight might not seem like our idea at all. Has that ever happened to you, where you just get this insight, and you're sort of like, Is this what I'm supposed to do? We might even argue with God, as Moses did at the burning bush. Some of you are shaking your heads. Remember Moses' response? First, fear. I guess I'd be terrified, too, if all of a sudden I saw a burning bush, and it wasn't really burning away. It was just burning. And then the voice of God comes from behind it. I mean, that's pretty scary. But he says, "Who me? Who me? I'm not qualified. I'm not a good speaker. Send my brother." I'll tell you what, I can identify with that reaction. But anyway, I drove by a church the other day, and the sign out in front said, "God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the call." And that's so true. If it's ours to do, we'll have everything we need to do it and do it well. Davenport, in her usual humor, also says, "God is a nag. If there's truth you need to realize, or something that's really ours to do, the opportunity often keeps resurfacing." Has that ever happened to you? It doesn't go away. It just keeps coming back to you again and again and again. And that might mean that is an insight from God. And finally, and most importantly, if we are aligned with God, if we are hearing the voice of God in any way, we are experiencing joy and peace. The path might be difficult along the way, and our faith might temporarily falter, as does Peter's, we know, later on. But there will be a deep inner satisfaction and certainty. Once again, that deep inner knowing that we are absolutely on the right track. And in the end, Davenport says that finally we stop asking if we're hearing the voice of God. We don't even ask, because if we are experiencing God's truth, we simply know, even if others might question our actions. Remember last week I did the quote that you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you odd sometimes. So sometimes people do think you're odd if you're living your truth, but that's okay. That's perfectly okay. And I have actually found that Job was right. I think he was right. That God's voice, divine inspiration, revelations of truth come to us in different ways. They don't come to all of us in exactly the same way. Job, remember, said, "Now one way, now the other." We may not experience a burning bush or God's booming voice telling us to build an ark, but in the depths of our being, if we are receptive, we are guided and spiritual truths are revealed. Maybe as we walk along a pristine beach, maybe as we drive down the highway, maybe as we follow a winding path through the woods or sit in a quiet sanctuary, and often Spirit's voice comes to us in a gentle, inner dialogue. And as we come to the garden alone, through the beauty of prayer and meditation, through the indwelling Christ, we do learn to listen. We learn to be more open and receptive to the great truths and insights of Spirit. Eckhart Tolle says, and I love this quote, "I cannot tell you any spiritual truth that deep within you don't know already. All I can do is remind you of what you have forgotten." And I think that is so true. The answers are all within. And so all we need to do is to remind ourselves of what we have forgotten. And as we connect and remember who we really are and what magnificent our God is, our lives are enriched. We reflect love, harmony, and peace. And we know it's the truth. So let's now just take a moment to join together and take the greatest truth about God into our hearts, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.